Morning, Council. This is the case of State versus Elijah W. Danton. Before we argue, please keep your masks on when you are not arguing. When you are presenting, please take your masks off so that we can hear and understand you. We have six members of the court present in the courtroom. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx, so you can see her.
Good morning, Council.
Do we have any questions before we begin?
Not for the appellant, Your Honor.
Very good. Then good morning to both of you, and good morning especially to Mr. Terrell. You may approach and you may proceed.
Yeah. May it please the court.
My name is David Terrell, and I represent the appellant in this matter. His name is Elijah Danton. In this case, when the Lincoln City Council enacted a firearm ban and listed a lot of different ordinances, they punctured that six-month window that Blanton versus City of North Las Vegas contains, which says that a court primarily looks at the six-month jail demarcation as a point of demarcation, but also looks at any other statutory penalties. And it's clear that this is a statutory penalty. It is an ordinance penalty, at least. It's contained in a different section, but that's the case with a lot of punishments that are enacted. So my client demanded a jury trial, asked respectfully for a jury trial at the very beginning of these cases, was denied one all along.
This is because he would lose the right to carry a gun?
That's correct, Your Honor. Under the Lincoln City Ordinance, because he was convicted of an assault, and not a domestic violence assault, but a simple assault with a six-month maximum penalty and a $500 fine maximum penalty, he also lost his Second Amendment rights to possess firearms. And that is a very broad prohibition.
Does he lose that right to possess firearms in the city of Lincoln or everywhere?
It's a little bit broader than the city of Lincoln. It's on municipal property owned by the city of Lincoln outside. So it's pretty much the city of Lincoln, Your Honor.
What have we said about firearm restrictions? Are they penalties for the crime or are they collateral consequences?
In my view, Your Honor, they are penalties.
What have we said?
What have you said? There's some language in Zoe H., which is a juvenile court opinion. And in that case, there's some language to the effect that prohibition on firearms is not a punishment. I respectfully disagree with that. And I think if you look at, I think we have to confine Zoe H. to its facts. Zoe H. dealt with a juvenile adjudication where a person had been adjudicated as a juvenile of a felony. And under that particular statute, they had the ability to go in and challenge it later and petition a district court or the juvenile court to remove it. So it wasn't quite as absolute. And I think Zoe H. talked about a different Nebraska case that was an ex post facto case. And I think that's pretty clear on an ex post facto case. But I think the language in Zoe H. does not apply to this case.
How would you suggest we attempt to differentiate between punishment on the one hand and collateral consequences of a conviction on another? What's a principled way to draw the line?
Your Honor, I believe that the Nevada case I cited, which is Anderson, and the other case that both Appley and I quoted, Amazoa, refer to that. A collateral consequence is something that, for example, on a domestic violence offense here that's under a city ordinance that, for example, doesn't have this penalty. Federal law prohibits a person from owning guns. That's clearly a collateral consequence.
Because it comes from some other sovereign.
Exactly. Yeah.
Listen, don't we have a state statute that says you don't get a jury trial for city ordinance violation?
We do, Your Honor. However, two cases have held that that's unconstitutional. The first is Richter versus Fairbanks.
So are you alleging that as applied in this case, that statute is unconstitutional?
Your Honor, what I'm purporting in this case is that...
That sort of was a yes or no question.
Fair enough. Your Honor, I don't believe I need to in this case because, for example, if you look back at Richter versus Fairbanks, if you look back at name of the case is escaping me right now, that is cited by the appellee, which is also a DUI case. I don't believe those cases, held that you needed to challenge the Constitution. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Assuming that it is a constitutional challenge, you didn't file the notice required by 2-109E, right?
That is true.
And you did not serve the Attorney General with a copy of the brief.
That is true, Your Honor.
And the Attorney General is not here today.
That's correct.
And who is it that defends state statutes in court?
It is the Attorney General. I would point out, Your Honor, that when I wrote my brief and when I initially wrote the brief to the Court of Appeals, in this case, it was then moved to your docket. And my position was pretty simple, that under Blanton versus North Las Vegas, this punctured that 6-month limit. So I don't believe that I need to have challenged that particular ordinance because I think it's already on shaky ground post Richter versus Fairbanks. And
but if we rule in your favor, we would have to say that as applied to your client's case, 2705 is unconstitutional, wouldn't it?
That's true with respect to this particular ordinance. But I don't think that, I think if you look back at...
But we'd have to say the statute's unconstitutional as applied to your client.
You would have to say that. I think your holding would be that the Lincoln City Council punctured the 6-month limit.
But is there anything that there's no prohibition on the Lincoln City Council imposing that kind of gun right restriction? That's not what you're arguing. You're arguing that they can't do that and not give a jury trial for a violation of the ordinance. Right? You're not challenging what the city of Lincoln did. You're challenging the state statute that says you don't get a jury trial for a violation.
Excuse me, Your Honor. No, I respectfully disagree with you, Your Honor. I am challenging exactly what the Lincoln City Council did in this case. And
what,
I think
what prohibits the city of Lincoln from putting restrictions on gun ownership for those that have been convicted of assault?
Two things, Your Honor. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Heller talks about reasonable restrictions on gun rights. And I don't see any argument brief talking about anything other than the Sixth Amendment.
Heller, I did cite to Heller, and I wish I would have cited to it more, actually, Your Honor, because I think Heller is very important in this case. And that's, for example, there's the Combs case that both the district court judge cited, as well as the Chavez case. And I think those are both suspect post-Heller. Chavez was decided pre-Heller, and the judge... The district court's ruling in this case is suspect because it was, I don't think it takes Heller into account. But to return to your question, I think both the Constitution of the state of Nebraska and the Constitution of the United States prohibit what the Lincoln City Council did in this case.
Has your client suffered any punishment for possessing a firearm since his conviction?
He has.
We don't have any of that in the record.
That's true. There is none of that in the record.
So even if you think you're asserting a Second Amendment challenge to the firearm ban, is that right? Do we even have it before us?
Your Honor, and in order to do that, my client has experienced punishment and that he cannot, if he goes to buy a gun in the city of Lincoln, exercise his rights under Heller and the Second Amendment in the Nebraska Constitution, they're not going to give him a permit. So he has suffered punishment.
Is that in our record anyway?
That is not in your record. And to be frank, Your Honor, I don't know how I could have put it in your record without, in this record, in this case, without telling, advising my client to violate the law and go do that. So I don't know how I could have done that.
Well, the law doesn't even, the firearm restriction doesn't apply until there's a conviction for one of the offenses, correct?
That's true, but I don't think that's a good, sorry if I interrupted.
No, that I just, I'm having a hard time understanding how, if it doesn't apply until after, until there is a conviction, right. I don't know how you would have put any evidence in.
No, that's very true, Your Honor. And there's some discussion of collateral consequences of those that take place after a conviction. To be frank, I don't understand the difference between that and punishment and some, and, you know, jail sentences in some cases, because my client isn't sentenced to incarceration until after.
If I may ask a related question, and that is, and whether or not the facts support it in this case, but perhaps it will inform us, if there's a conviction for a misdemeanor, and one of the conditions of probation is not possessing firearms, is that a proper term of probation for a misdemeanor conviction?
I think it, in almost every case it is, Your Honor. There's a lot of case law that holds that probation is punishment, and there's a lot of case law that holds that courts have broad discretion. Probation is temporary. There's a limitation, I believe it's 3 years on the length of a misdemeanor probation unless it's an enhanced offense. So there's some limitations that do make that punishment, but I think that would be permissible. I think the 10-year ban on all possession in the city of Lincoln that runs afoul of Heller is the problem in this case that makes it punishment that gives my client the right to a jury trial.
So in your view, a probation term for a misdemeanor that restricts gun possession could or is permissible, notwithstanding the other statutes, which, as I recall, are to the effect that if you're convicted of a felony, firearms restrictions is statutory.
That's correct. Even Heller holds that. There's limitations on the Second Amendment, right? And it mentions felons specifically that they lose that right to a gun. But I think you're right. In a probation term, it is proper, and that demonstrates that it's punishment. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cables, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please the court. My name is Rob Caples. I'm an assistant city attorney for the city of Lincoln, and most certainly not the attorney general. However, I'm here to argue this case, which does, in fact, if it were to be argued the way the appellant wants to, is a constitutional question, and it was not properly raised before this court. So to get past the statute that prohibits a jury trial, The appellant in this case would have had to convince a judge and or this court that the statute's unconstitutional as applied. That's what happened in the Wilshire case. Wilshire was an easier case for this court because the federal courts had already decided the third offense, driving under the influence case, carried with it serious penalties that required a jury trial. And that had already been decided and this court agreed. That is not this case, Your Honors. And in this case, he would characterize this separate ordinance as an additional penalty. The constitutional question about the state law is not before this court properly and cannot be raised here and cannot be decided, but we don't need to get there because I don't believe this court will characterize this separate ordinance as a punishment. It's not a criminal penalty.
What distinguishes this from Wilshire? What makes the 15-year revocation of a driver's license punishment and a 10-year loss of gun rights something else?
Well, it was punishment in Wilshire because it was in the direct penalty. It was in the statute, and it's the sentencing judge played the direct role in it, and it came into the sentencing order.
So it all depends on where it's codified?
In some sense, yes. But in other words, but the federal courts had already decided in Wilshire the Sixth Amendment was implicated by the 15-year revocation. So for the state of Nebraska to take a different position in Wilshire wouldn't have worked because the federal courts had already said this is how it is with the Sixth Amendment as under that particular punishment, which came directly from the court enacted by the legislature as a direct penalty.
But we did hold the 15-year driver's license revocation as punishment.
Yes.
And I'm trying to understand how we decide what's punishment, what's a collateral consequence. You offered the statute that it's codified, but wouldn't that allow legislatures to get around the problem just by how they draft the statute? Can it really just depend on where it's codified?
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. And okay, so I cited the Zoe case in my brief. I don't know that I paid it the attention it was due, but I believe that that case answered this exact question in this context exactly. Zoe H. case was really the same issue. It was a juvenile case, yes, but it was really a person who was prohibited from having a jury trial because of a statute. They made a jury demand, it was denied, she asserted her jury trial right because if she were convicted or found or adjudicated in juvenile court, she would be subject to the firearm restriction by state law as a separate matter.
So why was it a collateral consequence in Zoe and a punishment in Wiltshire? What's the line that makes those two things different?
Well, as this court said in Zoe, and that was in June, that then it came out January 2020, it is a collateral consequence. It acts solely and independently from the case at hand. It doesn't make the case more serious. Whatever the appellant was charged with, in this case assault, the firearm restriction that he may face afterwards doesn't affect his penalty here.
It's not a may face or will inevitably face.
Well, in this case, I guess he would face if he were convicted, but that's not up to the sentencing judge. And it didn't make the penalty for the assault itself any more or less serious. He still faced a fine of up to $500, a maximum jail sentence of up to 6 months. He got a $250 fine. But the firearm ordinance that was separate and independent didn't affect what his penalty could be as a result of his crime.
I'd like to ask you about the portion of your argument that you say the firearm ban is separate and independent. The penalty section under the Lincoln Municipal Code for what I'm going to refer to as the battery ordinance. The penalty section is section 1.24.10, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's got three subsections. It's got subsection A that sets forth the 6 months in jail or 500, whatever the number, I think it's 500, but whatever the number of a fine or both, right?
Yes.
So far, so good. But there's also a subsection C of that section that if you parse through the language says that the penalty, now we're talking about penalty for violation of the battery ordinance, will be cumulative with and in addition to any other penalty, punishment, or sentence specified by this code. The words this code would include the firearm ban ordinance section, wouldn't it?
Fair enough, but I think the ordinance itself, it's a general penalty. It applies to every possible violation of the city code. And I think it's just setting out the fact that the judge is going to impose a penalty independent of whatever else might occur. So there may be other collateral consequences that might incur as a result from some other section, but that's not going to affect what the penalty is for the violation itself.
So I guess what I'm asking you, isn't there an argument, perhaps not articulated in this case, that one of the direct consequences of the penalty section, 1.24.10, is to incorporate the firearm ban?
Not as a direct penalty, no, because the sentencing judge plays no role in that. Whether or not it occurs or not has nothing to do with the facts of the case. It doesn't have to be found on the record by the sentencing judge to be an aggravated offense or some other criteria that the council or the legislative body would have set forth. It's solely and independently an issue that happens outside the court proceeding. It doesn't change what the penalty is. And that's the Zoe H decision. Zoe H said it didn't make any difference that there was a firearm restriction that would occur afterwards. The penalty or the offense itself, in that case of juvenile adjudication, was the same. And it didn't matter in the Zoe H decision that she was a juvenile.
Did it matter that the juvenile adjudication is civil in nature and not criminal?
That was a separate and independent basis this court set out. The court gave two reasons why she didn't get a juvenile or a jury trial. One was because the nature of a juvenile proceeding and disposition is civil rather than criminal, and that cannot affect the Sixth Amendment and make it more serious because it's not a criminal penalty. But the court went on and talked about this separate statute that was not part of the juvenile code, that was not, it was going to affect anybody. It would have, well, I'm sorry, the court referred back to State v. Peters and made the analogy to that case, and it didn't make any difference. So whether it was a juvenile or an adult that was going to be subject to a firearm restriction didn't change it from being collateral or non-collateral. So
may I ask you the same question, or roughly the same question I asked opposing counsel? If a probation term following conviction for a misdemeanor includes a term that the defendant cannot possess firearms, how would you characterize that? And is that anticipated by your other arguments?
I don't disagree that a term of probation that would include a firearm restriction or any other restriction could be characterized as punishment. I mean, that's not this case, obviously. So the sentencing judge played no role in any firearm restrictions on this appellant. But I don't think it would change the argument in this case. So if that were to be the case and this appellant were subject to a probation order that restricted firearms, I think it would be a legitimate thing to perhaps come before the court and challenge that, but that's not this case at all. And
because in that context, it's not required that there be a firearms restriction. It's on the list of things that trial judge found advisable and in connection with probation department, perhaps. It's advisable, but it's not necessary. Is that how that term finds its way into a probation order?
I think that's correct. In a probation agreement, obviously, the defendant would have to either accept the terms of probation or not. But I mean, probation certainly is not a right. It's something that's afforded to a criminal defendant as an alternative to incarceration. So it's different, but I mean, it's not a direct imposition. So I mean, this was not the penalty. It was something that happened afterwards. And Mr. Denton, the appellant, can certainly challenge it if he's ever charged with having a firearm. And that would be directly in front of the court at that time. But at this point, it is not directly in front of this court.
Thank you.
So I believe I'm out of town, but I'd be happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so that concludes our arguments on State versus Denton. You are both excused. Please leave through the side door, and we appreciate your wearing your masks, and we will go on to the next case of the day then. And before that happens, someone comes in and does a lot of cleaning. So again, thank you very much for following our procedures here and for being here today. Okay. Yes.